From KQED Public Radio, this is Capitol Notes, our weekly look at California politics. I'm John Myers from KQED. Anthony York, the editor of Capitol Weekly, adjusting the microphone on the other side of the console.
It's cockeyed. It's a little cockeyed. Maybe I'm cockeyed.
Well, if it's cockeyed, it's appropriate for you. So we're sitting here in the studio on Thursday after the big special election, and I think we know one easy word to describe that election. Known across the globe.
Futile?
Hey, that's actually a good second word. I was thinking no.
Oh,
no. Yet. Nein in German.
Big victory for Abel Maldonado, I read.
Wow. Well, maybe. You know, we were just talking about this before we started recording. Trying to understand what the voters were saying is really like a Rorschach test. Is it an ice cream cone? Is it a dog? Is it a tree? Is it? I mean, it just... You know, I don't know how anybody can say what the voters said for sure. But let's.
I think they said ice cream.
Okay. Yeah. I'll go with that. But here are the numbers. I pulled the numbers off so that we can say exactly how bad it was as of Thursday. 1A, the old spending limit reserve fund attached to a tax increase, $34.66.
So was that a rebuke of tax increases or spending restraints?
I don't know, but that's 2-1 no, and that's the marquee measure. 1B, the money for education, and I mean even education, the popular thing with the voters, $37.63. 1C, the lottery, the $5 billion cash advance from the lottery, $35.65. 1D, the borrowing money from children's, or not borrowing, taking money from children's health funding, $34.66. 1E, mental health. Taking money from that was $34.66. I'm doing a little rounding here. And yes, the one winner, which actually I think also was a no to business as usual, as I wrote in a piece this week. Sorry, trying to be clever. 1F, the ban on pay raises during deficit years passed by 74-26. So right. Really a 2-1 kicking to the curb of all the big measures.
Well, and I think this sort of answers a big question that we've asked for the last 8 weeks or so on this podcast. And I think that you can look at those results, look at the numbers across the board there, and say this was, to use your phrase, one big no burrito, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that they didn't really get
it. This was not a burrito they wanted.
Yes, they said no to the whole burrito.
Right.
And that people just went into the ballot box and voted no across the board. They didn't look at, you know, typically they would want money for schools and maybe, you know, they didn't look at the nuances of this. They just said no. I tend to believe this sort of thinking that voters didn't want to be bothered. They didn't want to do the work that they have elected legislators to do. They want the legislators to do their own work. I don't know that you can read too much about the policy mandate coming out of this. I know conservatives are saying this is a rebuke for anybody. You know, this is clearly a sign that voters do not want tax increases. I know that, you know, folks in labor are saying, yeah, this is a sign that voters didn't want their spending limit. I just don't think that they even engaged on that level. I mean,
Well, because if they did, then they wanted nothing. I mean, because if you're going to just assume for a moment if they did engage on that level, which I think you're actually right. I think they probably just said, why am I dealing with this? Nah. But if they did, look at what they said. We wouldn't want a tax increase. We don't want a spending limit. We don't want borrowing from the lottery. We don't want to cut children's programs. We don't want to cut mental health programs. And we don't want extra money for school. In other words, we don't want spending. We don't want cuts. We don't want borrowing. We don't want taxes.
Right. If you're gonna, in other words, the message
is too mixed. Then,
well, if you're going to read this totally literally,
what
you're saying voters want is to protect mental health programs, protect early childhood development programs, no tax increases,
right.
No limits on spending, and cut the heck out of schools and don't borrow any money.
And I was going to say,
that doesn't make any sense.
And that becomes the danger of anyone who tries to cherry pick any one of those messages out, which is what we are hearing a lot. You know, immediately afterwards, depending on where you were on the political spectrum, you said, oh, well, clearly the voters are saying X.
Right.
And yeah, therein lies the problem. I think you've got a great point. I think voters are just like, why am I doing this? Why am I involved in this? And I think one of the questions, I mean, you know, we don't want to spend too much time. Well, we are a politics podcast, but let's talk about the campaign. Was there a way that this campaign could have gone differently? Is there any message that the Yes forces, the burrito campaign, could have put forward to get the voters to deal with this? I mean, and I'm going to answer my version is maybe. Right. There were some missteps But that being said, it would still have been tough.
Well, I think a couple of things, you know, strategically, if you're talking not just messaging, but the grand strategy, I think putting five measures on the ballot was a mistake. Six, whatever, if you want to count 1F. You know, if it would have just been Prop 1A, if you wouldn't have had the money for schools, if you wouldn't have had, you know, the borrowing and the taking of I don't mean to downplay what $1 billion can do, but it was only $1 billion, right? From the early childhood development and mental health programs. If you would have kept those things off the ballot, I think it would have been simpler. And I think some of that was reflected in the messaging of the closing days of the campaign, where they just said yes on A and B and tried to simplify the campaign. The campaign was so complicated, and it was complicated for a number of reasons. Number one is that there were so many intricate policy decisions on the ballot, and then the messaging, which we've talked about before, that it went from a message of reform to, you know, that we'll never have to do this again, which has been a tried and true
right.
message for the governor, to this last minute fiscal desperation message. And if they had focused in on one message, would it have been different? I mean, maybe. I don't know.
And walk back to the beginning, as you talked about a moment ago. Walk back to the beginning of them getting on the ballot. I mean, this was, as you know, the way I wrote it this week, this is a case of insideritis. This is a package of proposals that made perfect sense under the dome of the Capitol with the political forces of the Capitol and the budget and government. It made no sense to the voters. It made perfect sense to attach in politics the spending limit to the tax increase so you'd get the necessary votes in the legislature, and then you attach 1B to 1A so you negate the California Teachers Association. You know what I'm saying?
Right,
and
absolutely.
For political strategists, this made great sense. But that's the inside game. The outside game, the real world game, people didn't get it. They didn't understand why these things were attached. They didn't understand how it worked. If they liked a limit on spending, they hated the taxes. There was no way they were going to vote for that.
Right. And even the speaker yesterday, Karen Bass, said that when she sat down and talked to a group of eight people for a half an hour, then they got it. Well, okay, maybe. But I think that sort of makes the earlier point that if they could have simplified, I don't want to spend too much time on what they could have done. But, you know, that I think in some ways they took for granted the lessons of 2004 with Prop 57. And 58. That was when the legislature put $15 billion worth of bonds on the ballot, again, to balance the budget. But it was one measure, and it was one simple thing. It was a simple idea. It was borrowing $15 billion to pay off the debt, to pay off some pre-existing debts to close the deficit so that we wouldn't have to do this again. And yet, and I think that's part of the problem, too, is that we've said never again to the voters for the last 5 years.
Well, and I was going to say that 2004 campaign is the other problem here, because the other measure that was pushed in 2004 was Prop 58, the balanced budget amendment, where the governor emphatically said, this will solve the problem. Never again will we be in this problem. The voters must have believed him in some way. Shocking.
Well.
Because it rang hollow when he tried to go back, or his surrogates tried to go back and make that point this time. I mean, voters thought they had solved the problem.
Yeah, and we all knew at the time that it was, you know,
we smart.
Well, no, and the reporters all questioned the legitimacy of this budget reform. It was the Splenda measure again. I mean, it was artificial sweetener. It was put on the ballot to make voters feel good about voting for $15 billion in bonds that they probably didn't want to do if they could avoid it. But there were huge loopholes.
Therein lies the perils of excessive salesmanship.
Yeah, perhaps. And this is going to the well one too many times. I mean, you know, I think now that we have a body of work here going back to 2003, 2004, there's been a sort of an assumption in the conventional wisdom about the governor's ability to go to the voters and the populist governor and being able to use ballot measures as a hammer to drive policy inside the Capitol. And I think now, you know, if you look at the results of 2005, you look at the results of this special election, you've got to really question how successful the governor is and how in touch he is with real voters.
Yeah. And this, you know, we don't have final numbers yet, but this is going to be a strong candidate for lowest turnout ever in California.
That's
the percentage of registered voters.
Right.
Yeah. I was going to say, looking at the totals now, if you look at the ones that got voted on the most, they're about not even quite 4 million voters. So that would be, you know, of 17 million registered voters, that would be a phenomenally low turnout. And so, again, I think, goes to show people didn't want to deal with this.
Right.
And the people that did want to deal with, or people that did show up to deal with it, didn't want any of it. So.
Right. Now, would this have been different if we could have somehow voted on this in June of 2010? You know, again, I don't know. I mean, was the electorate part of the problem? Maybe. But again, voters have been asked. We've had a special election in 2003 for the recall. We had an extra election in 2005, the governor's special election. You know, one interesting point that I was talking to some folks who were involved in the Yes campaign, and they were saying, you know, if we could have had this election in 2005, if these measures had been on the ballot in 2005, we could have had a very different result. That these were somehow, this was a compromise. These were more, these measures had more bipartisan support inside the Capitol. And if that's what the governor had gone to the voters with first in 2005, instead of an agenda which was very conservative and had, you know, pent up aggression from the Republicans who had been out of power for a while, it would have set a totally different course for the governor's time in office.
Of course, the interesting thing about that is the people who would say that now are the people who were brought in to replace the circle of people who were around the governor back then who were pushing him more to the right side of the spectrum.
So. Right. So there could be some personalities and egos involved in
possibly.
That as well.
But. So now that we know that the voters said, no way, you know, of course, the huge question becomes, then what? The governor had estimated, his budget team had estimated the deficit at about $21.3 billion, though, Anthony, you made a very valid point that I think the press is going to have to deal with here soon. This happened, too, in the first one when we were saying where he kept saying a $42 billion problem. Well, that included a reserve that wasn't all deficit, and the $21 billion is not all deficit.
There's a $2 billion reserve in that number. Right.
In which case, that could be a $19 billion or so.
Doesn't that make you feel better?
Well, no, because I was going to say, the Ledge analyst here on Thursday, Mac Taylor, put out a new assessment where he said, we think the governor's projections are reasonable, we think revenues are about $3 billion worse than the governor thinks they are, which could still put us in the $22 to $24 billion, a lot of money, but $22 to $24 billion range. So now what? Well, Thursday morning, this morning, as we're taping this on Thursday, the governor did a quick Q&A with reporters outside of a legislative prayer breakfast, and go ahead and insert any kind of comment you can think about what praying was going on in that room.
Has it? Yeah. Okay.
Which I couldn't tell you because they actually kicked us out. I tried to go in, and
the heathens in the press corps were left at the gates.
There was no hospitality for the press.
First rule, man, you don't let the devil into the church, Myers.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah. So, but outside of that event, the governor talked to reporters. I was there. A lot of other folks were there. And at first, it was hard to tell whether he was just kind of talking in the broad way he often does or whether he was making a policy shift. We now hear he's making a policy shift, which is he is going to apparently abandon his proposal to borrow about $5.5 billion from Wall Street as a short-term borrowing in a short-term borrowing way for budgetary problems. The Ledge analyst had said it probably was legally questionable. It was bad precedent. They're called revenue anticipation warrants. The governor said, I've heard the message. The voters said, live within your means. We're not going to do it. So that could mean another $5 billion in cuts that he says he wants his budget team to bring to him.
Right. And you know, I think it's telling that the governor came out with his proposal in May, and at least a third of the solution was borrowing, essentially. Mm-hmm. You know, you look at the other things the governor proposed, and granted, you know, the governor's finance team got the memo on Sunday that they had to have a budget in place by Thursday. So this not everything is as fleshed out as some of us in the press corps would like. But a lot of those plans are one-time borrowing, you know, deferred payments and one-time solutions. I mean, the real cuts, the lasting cuts, even in the governor's own budget, are about $6-7 billion.
Well, I was going to say the spending reductions, I think, total about nine.
Is it nine?
In the one that was the plan B.
That's in the 21, right. I was right.
Right. So about $9 billion in spending reductions. But apparently, he's now putting on the table $14-15 billion in spending reductions if he's going to walk away from this borrowing.
And that's the question of where it comes from. And I think that, you know, I wrote a piece on this in Capital Weekly this week. It's not even a matter of you know, the general fund revenues now have gone down to about in the neighborhood of $85 billion. Down, that's the newest estimate. I didn't hear the actual number from the LAO today, but it's in that range. Only about $40 billion of that money, so you know,
less than half is what
they call discretionary spending. The rest of it, the other $45 billion or so, is locked away in budget formulas and things that the state has to make payments on. So you're talking about cutting. You go back, you're cutting, you know, $20 billion, if that's really what we're talking about here, out of a $40 billion pot of discretionary funding. And you run into other problems as well. I mean,
But let me poke a hole in that. That's assuming you don't suspend Prop 98.
Well, this is the thing. And this is what I was getting to before I was
sorry.
So rudely interrupted, is that this year you can't suspend Prop 98 because we have federal stimulus dollars
right.
who are coming in. So, and those stimulus dollars are contingent upon
right.
what they're calling a maintenance of effort. You have to provide the same level of service that you were providing in 2006.
Right.
And so we don't have the freedom to suspend Prop 98. The governor now is asking for a waiver or a change in federal law so that he can make $750 million in Medi-Cal cuts.
Right.
Well, you know, again, you need the permission of the federal government to do that. And so, you know, the way we put it in Capital Weekly this week, the budget problem has now suddenly gone three-dimensional, where you've got the Obama administration and Nancy Pelosi now in the middle of our budget negotiations. And, you know, you can decide for yourself whether that's a good thing. But I've seen how hard it is to get six Republican votes. I don't think involving the Obama administration and Congress is going to make this simpler.
You know, the other thing that the governor said this morning is he said, you know, our revenues are close to what they were in 1999. Cue the Prince song.
Right.
And so we need to dial back our spending to 1999 levels. Well, I wrote something this morning afterwards and went back and looked at where spending was in 1999. And I tried to be fair. You know, you have to kind of account for inflation. A dollar then isn't a dollar now. But whatever, I tried to put it in a little calculator. I tried to be fair. That would be some pretty dramatic cuts. And right, you certainly, even though I wrote, you know, that would might mean another $3 billion out of education, you might not be able to do that because of that stimulus money. But it would mean a tremendous cut in one particular place, corrections,
yep.
which is completely politically unpalatable to do a major, major cut in prisons. And so—
because that's going to mean releasing yeah. prisoners, which it's again was part of the governor's
and
plan.
Yet the governor says, absolutely no way, I will not consider tax increases. Is that an opening gambit or is that absolutely don't even come talk to me for the next several months about it.
I do get the sense that, I mean, coming from Democrats as well as Republicans, that, you know, as the Democratic leaders said in their press conference Wednesday, they're not going to lead with taxes, right? I mean, you can parse, you can see there's wiggle room, but that the governor's office is at least making it clear at this point that when they say no taxes, they're not just talking about the kind that you need two-thirds vote for. They're talking about fees. They're talking about, you know, this 41 vote, you know, scheme that Democrats put together where you lower one tax and then raise another one by the same amount and replace one with a fee. And, you know, they're talking, at least they're talking that way now. We'll see what happens when they start trying to, you know, I mean, look, this is going to be a slaughter. I mean, this budget, if, you know, to cut an additional $20 billion out of the budget, it's going to be a slaughter. And I think if you're slaughtering things, you're going to have to cut some sacred cows. How's mm-hmm. that for a metaphor there?
That
sounds kosher. Is that kosher?
Well, I was going to say it's pretty brutal. I think it requires wearing large boots.
Well,
and
this goes back – and a slicker. But this goes back to what we were talking about before.
We've now thoroughly grossed out the podcast
that's
audience.
Okay,
go ahead.
Okay.
They're vegetarians.
NPR. Well, we'll send them a tote bag. But going back to what we said before about trying to derive a clear message from voters on this, look, a lot of the cuts that were made back in February that we're talking about adding to now, those cuts haven't really phased in yet. A lot of people have not felt the pain of those cuts. And so, you know, right about budget time here, depending on how quickly the budget gets resolved, some of those cuts are going to start phasing in and people are going to start feeling pain. And then we're going to cut on top of that. I mean, where are the voters going to be then? And I think that at some point, voters are going to have to look in the mirror and say, okay, what kind of government do I want? How much am I willing to pay and for what services? And those are difficult, candid questions, you know, those conversations are difficult to hold in an environment like a special election environment that we just went through.
I think one more complexity just to make sure we get in as the week comes to an end here that I was mentioning to Anthony right before we started is that apparently Tim Geithner, the Secretary of the Treasury, was testifying before Congress about, I'm not sure which committee and I'm not exactly sure what the focus was, but a member of Congress, a representative from a different state who clearly had it out for California, decided to put him right on the spot and say, are you going to, you know, are you guys really going to back the debt of California? Because this goes to the cash crisis that California is going to have in January, I mean, in July. And Geithner effectively, according to the report out of the Los Angeles Times, said something to the effect of, I don't think we have the ability to do that without an act of Congress, there which is go. Not to say it's impossible, but it will test the might of the California congressional delegation in getting what they need, which is effectively this, don't worry, we will back up the debt of California if, right. God forbid, California defaults on its borrowing.
We need our parents in Washington to co-sign on the loan on this one. Yeah.
But it does add to the complexity you were talking about national and congressional leaders stepping into the California mess. And no one can ignore the California mess. They may love to say we're crazy, but we're the sixth, seventh largest economy in the world. We are a huge part of the American economic engine, so they can't just walk away.
Well, and the question—
we're not Rhode Island.
No.
Oh, sorry.
You could walk away from Rhode Island?
I don't know. If there are any Rhode Islanders out there,
sounds
sorry.
Like a country song, I walked away from Rhode— never mind. Anyway. But, you know, this will be an interesting dynamic, I think, that we'll be talking about more in the next couple of months because— to what extent, if the feds do decide to bail us out in some way,
which depends on how you define bailout, because that's a loaded term for some politicians.
I'm not talking about help throwing us. Cash at it, but yeah, all right, offer assistance, or implement some of these changes, whether it's for a Medi-Cal waiver so that the governor can make the cuts he wants, or backing our debt. To what extent can the governor or other people who have pushed for certain structural reforms lobby the federal government and say, okay, you guys, we'll do this for you, but you've got to do A, B, and C. You've got to get a spending limit in place. You've got to get, you know, certain things. And that might be a back route. You know, we saw labor unions trying to sort of go around cuts that the legislature had made by running to the administration. That didn't work out so well.
Yeah, we found out this week, too, that the feds are going to say, no, it's right. Okay. That's not a problem.
But to what extent might the Schwarzenegger administration be able to use Obama as sort of a backdoor way of getting some of these reforms introduced in California, because if they're attached to money that we need to get our books balanced.
Don't know the answer to that.
Dun, dun, dun.
You know, it's just fascinating. There's a very popular, there's a feeling out there. There's part of the current zeitgeist. Mm-hmm. Shall we say?
Let's say
in national politics that, you know, a crisis is a great time for leadership, and a crisis is a time where you really can get creative and novel. But, you know, as the governor and Democrats and Republicans in the legislature have said, the difference is the feds have a lot more options, also known as printing money, also sure. known as finding other ways out of their problem. There is not a lot of creative room, at least in the way we know the way California works. On this level, and you know, and that's what right. you were pointing out by your earlier discussion of the reporting you did this week. Right. This is not some small problem, and you know, and I think really the other thing that I find really, you know, interesting, but also you know tough as a Californian, is that all those times we have talked about how bad things are, they paled in comparison probably to what this is because right. the options are so limited.
Right, and that's why I think we see. You know, out of the gate, I mean, we saw a rally on the Capitol steps yesterday calling for a constitutional convention.
That was Wednesday.
Oh, excuse me. Not yesterday.
Right.
Since today's Wednesday.
They're hearing this on Friday. Okay. Come on, play okay. along there, York.
Anyway, on Wednesday. And we also saw paperwork being submitted for a part-time legislature.
Finally dropped.
And so, you know, these things are now in the mix. And I think that we may be on the verge of a much larger discussion about our relationship to our state government. You know, the irony of this, given what we just went through, is that ultimately this decision might wind up back at the ballot box.
Right. In which case you've got to convince the voters that, right. no, actually, we really do need you.
Right.
Sorry to do this.
Right.
We cannot
do
it.
But if it's a popular movement and not a smoke-filled room hatched compromise, maybe it'll be different, right?
Maybe, right? Keep hope alive.
I see a podcast title, maybe.
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 I'm not calling. I don't think that's the podcast title for this one, though. We'll have to see. Well, it might be on Capital Weekly. You have different podcast titles than I do. We'll have to talk about
that. So come check us both out.
Yeah, right. Right. If you've listened to it on Capital Notes or on iTunes, then you want to hear it again, go to Capital Weekly. We'll take all the hits we can.
Or vice versa.
Okay, vice versa. Fair enough. All right. Well, so next week we'll have to figure out what happens with all of this lovely news that all the voters gave us from this week. But at least we don't have to talk about the campaign anymore. Whew. And now, officially, I am retiring the term burrito.
Boo.
I am officially retiring the budget burrito. It was a great moment in podcasting history.
That burrito has flown.
Tear wept. Wept right here. Anyway, I think that'll wrap it up. For Anthony York at Capital Weekly, I'm John Myers from KQBD. We'll see you next time.